Wunderschönen guten Morgen, ihr hört Insert Moin, ich bin der Manu wie immer und bei mir zu Gast heute ein neuer Gast, die Helen, guten Morgen.
Moin Moin.
Du kommst aus Berlin und arbeitest bei Doppelpunkt?
IGN Deutschland.
Tino war ja schon bei uns zu Gast, ein paar andere deiner Kollegen auch. Bist du da jetzt frisch dabei, bist du schon länger dabei? Erzähl mal ein bisschen was, wie du dazu gekommen bist, jetzt über Spiele zu reden und zu schreiben wahrscheinlich.
Ich habe im Juni letztes Jahr also für mein Studium das Praktikum da angefangen. Also ich studiere Game Design und genau, habe da eben ganz normal 4 Monate Praktikum angefangen und danach dann so halt weiter da quasi gejobbt, also Teilzeit. Und das mache ich immer noch.
Ja, das machst du immer noch. Und was machst du für Aufgabengebiete dort? Also was macht man als Praktikum von Tino?
Kaffee, ausschließlich. Und manchmal auch Schreiben und eben ab und zu Videos und alles, was so anfällt in der Redaktion. Also ganz normal.
Standard. So, ja. Wir haben uns jetzt getroffen in Berlin. Wir waren eingeladen von Devolver, Devolver Digital, der wunderbare Indie-Publisher, der auch, glaube ich, am meisten bekannt geworden ist, glaube ich, durch den Vertrieb von Hotline Miami. Und die haben eingeladen zur Euronerd Roadshow. Heißt nichts anderes, als dass sie 3 Spiele im Gepäck hatten, um die vorzustellen. Das waren zum einen Titan Souls, dann Not a Hero und Ronin. Titan Souls hat sich dann gerade an dem Tag auch zum Release getroffen. Das heißt, das Spiel kam an dem Tag auch raus. Und da haben wir uns getroffen, haben lecker Mate getrunken und die Spiele angespielt und mit den Entwicklern gesprochen. Kurz als Hinweis, ich habe ein Interview mit allen 3 Entwicklern gemacht. Das kommt jetzt als zweite Hälfte dieses Podcasts. Aber damit man mit diesen Interviews auch ein bisschen was anfangen kann, habe ich mir dich geschnappt, Helen, damit wir mal so kurz einordnen, was das überhaupt für Spiele sind. Lass uns doch damit anfangen. Such dir eins der 3 Spiele aus. Womit möchtest du denn anfangen?
Also, weil es mir persönlich tatsächlich am besten gefallen hat, würde ich Not a Hero nehmen.
Ja, erklär mal, was ist Not a Hero?
Not a Hero ist ein 2,5D-Cover-Shooter im Prinzip. Sah für mich auf den ersten Blick auch ziemlich nach Hotline Miami aus. Gefällt mir aber viel besser, weil es zum einen nicht so schwer ist und weil es halt irgendwie so geile Bullshit-Referenzen auch hat. Also du kannst halt irgendwie 9 Helden frei spielen und zum Beispiel Jesus aus Big Lebowski, der dann halt auch die ganze Zeit so eine Sprüche raushaut. Und du hast halt die Mission, alle Kriminellen auf der Welt zu erschießen, weil der Bunny Lord aus der Zukunft zurückgekommen ist, weil die Welt untergeht in der Zukunft und dann haben die den Masterplan, in der Vergangenheit einfach alle Kriminellen umzubringen, weil dann wird alles besser. Und das musst du ja dann ausführen.
Und diese Aufgabe nehmen wir natürlich dankenswerterweise auch an. Du hast gesagt, erinnert dich an Hotline Miami, was genau? Weil es ist ja weder die Perspektive noch irgendwie so die, von der Gewalt geht's ja auch in eine ganz andere Richtung eigentlich, oder?
Also wirklich nur der allererste Eindruck, also so die Farben, dieser Pixel-Art-Style, den Devolver ja auch bei den anderen Games hat. Also ich bin in der Indie-Szene jetzt nicht so ultra bewandert, deswegen war das jetzt einfach meine erste Assoziation.
Ja gut, es geht halt auch, ist ja auch ein Tötungssimulator.
Jo.
Genau. Mich hat sehr stark an Broforce erinnert, weiß nicht, ob du das kennst. Ist auch so ein 2D-Ballerspiel in Pixeloptik. Daran hat es mich so ein bisschen erinnert, aber es ist deutlich weniger chaotisch. Also Broforce haben wir neulich besprochen. Da ist ja alles so zufallsgeneriert und man kann irgendwie, man kriegt immer zufällig irgendwelche Helden zugelost, die man dann so freischaltet. Und hier ist es ein bisschen geordneter, aber hat trotzdem einen sehr hohen Chaos-Faktor irgendwie. Aber du hast gesagt, Deckungsshooter, das klingt sehr lustig irgendwie als 2D. Wie muss man sich das denn vorstellen?
Nee, du snappst halt, also wenn du ganz normal kurz A drückst, snappst du halt in Cover und kannst dich halt so von Cover zu Cover quasi vorsnappen. Und ansonsten bist du auch ziemlich schnell tot.
Ja, und es hat auch ein bisschen mehr Puzzle-Charakter, finde ich, gell? Also es geht schon darum, die Gegnerwellen, die so in diesen Räumen sich befinden, wie soll man sagen, also gezielt auszuschalten. Es geht nicht nur rein ums Töten des Tötenswillens oder irgendwie den ganzen Level leer zu räumen, sondern man hat halt auch so ja, wie so für so ein Spiel eigentlich typisch. Du hast verschiedene Ebenen. Du kannst nicht hüpfen als Held, sondern du musst dann immer irgendwie durch Fenster hüpfen, um dann in eine Etage unten wieder durchs Fenster zu krachen. Rollst dich in die Deckung im Schatten, stürmst im richtigen Moment wieder raus, um Leute von hinten zu erwischen und so. Also je nach Charakter und je nach Level spielt sich's auch ein bisschen unterschiedlich, aber hat trotzdem eine sehr hohe Geschwindigkeit insgesamt, fand ich. Also es ist nicht so extrem wie jetzt so ein Super Meat Boy oder so, aber man hat schon sehr viel Adrenalin auch dabei, fand ich. Und der Humor, oder? Der Humor, der hat's auch irgendwie gut getragen, weil es, wie du schon gesagt hast, die Charaktere haben die ganze Zeit irgendwelche komischen Sprüche auf den Lippen. Manchmal kommt auch dieser Bunny Lord mit dir mit und kommentiert alles, was du machst. Also das haben sie schon ganz cool hingekriegt, dass man da irgendwie sehr viel Spaß dabei hatte.
Auf jeden Fall. Das hat ja, haben die ja auch erzählt, irgendwie, dass da, das ist ja, also die Texte sind halt zu Teilen zufällig generiert und ist halt einfach irgendwie so eine Handvoll Offensive-Wörter reingeworfen, die dann zwischendurch mal aufkommen. Und es liest sich dann halt auch so richtig schwachsinnig und mit so einem, also so kindischer Humor, da bin ich immer sehr schnell dabei.
Da bist du bei uns im Podcast ja genau richtig.
Ja, wunderbar.
Hast du Olli Olli gespielt, dieses Skateboard-Spiel, was auch so ein 2D-Spiel war von den gleichen Machern?
Nee, hab ich noch nicht, aber ich wusste auch, dass das von Roll 7 ist, ja.
Genau, Roll 7 hat dieses Spiel gemacht und spielt sich aber komplett anders. Also wer da irgendwelche Ähnlichkeiten erwartet, die einzige Ähnlichkeit ist wirklich die 2D-Optik und halt Pixel-Style. Aber das haben ja viele Indie-Spiele, deswegen kann man da keine Rückschlüsse drauf ziehen. Also ein sehr, sehr cooles Projekt. Kommt, glaube ich, im Mai, gell, hat er gesagt. Und erstmal leider nur für PC, aber ich bin mir relativ sicher, dass das irgendwie für Konsolen auch kommen wird.
Genau, am 7. Mai kommt es für PC.
Sehr gut. Also unbedingt einen Blick mal drauf werfen oder mal ein Video angucken. Ich glaube, wenn man das mal in Aktion gesehen hat, was jetzt hier im Podcast ein bisschen schwierig ist, will man das, glaube ich, spielen. Also das hat mir auch sehr, sehr gut gefallen. Ganz anderes Spiel war dagegen Titan Souls. Das gibt's jetzt auch schon seit ein paar Tagen. Magst du mal kurz sagen, an was dich Titan Souls oder was Titan Souls ist?
Das im Prinzip, also für mich war der erste Eindruck so Shadow of the Colossus mit Gameboy-Optik so ein bisschen. Also hast ja auch so die also es erinnert, finde ich, optisch total an Link's Awakening, auch so von den Farben und so. Mhm. Und du hast aber im Prinzip halt alles entfernt, außer den Bossfights. Also es ist eigentlich nur eben Welt exploren und Bosse killen auf verschiedenste Arten und Weisen.
Ja, fand ich sehr interessant. Also im ersten Moment denkt man ja, Shadow of the Colossus, aber hat im Endeffekt gar nicht so viel damit zu tun, außer dass es eben halt namensgebend davon inspiriert ist. Und es erinnert insofern daran, dass man eben auch durch so eine sehr leere, melancholische Welt läuft, in der eigentlich nichts mehr existiert außer Ruinen. Und eben diese Titans, also die Kolosse quasi. Der Unterschied ist aber bei Shadow of the Colossus ist ja eigentlich ein vertikaler Plattformer des Shadow of the Colossus, dass du wirklich erst rausfinden musst, wie kommst du an diesem Titan überhaupt hoch. Sowas gibt's hier nicht, sondern du musst eigentlich nur, wie du gesagt hast, so Zelda-typische Bossgegner erledigen. Und der Clou an der Sache ist, dass du im Grunde eigentlich immer nur einen Schuss damit brauchst, weil das ganze Projekt ist aus einem Game Jam heraus entstanden, das erklären die Entwickler auch gleich im Interview hinten dran noch, bei dem das Thema war One-Shot-Counts oder irgendwie sowas in der Art. Wie gesagt, sagen sie gleich you im Interview nochmal. You only got one chance oder irgendwie sowas. Ja? You only got one. Ich glaube, es war so freigestellt. Und daraufhin haben sie dieses Konzept entwickelt und haben das halt wirklich komplett durchgezogen. Also die Welt hat nichts anderes außer eben so einer riesen Weltkarte mit 15 Bossen. Ich glaube, es gibt noch ein paar versteckte und so, aber das haben sie wirklich eiskalt durchgezogen und das muss man schon mögen. Also mir hat's schon gefallen, aber ich kann mir auch gut vorstellen, dass man das, wenn man das ganze Spiel jetzt spielt und nach ein paar Bossen, dass es einem ein bisschen öde werden könnte, wenn man sich eben nicht dafür begeistern kann, diesen Clou rauszufinden, wie man diesen Boss erledigt. Ja, oder wie war dein Eindruck? Würde dich das jetzt reizen, da alle 15 Bosse zu erledigen? Oder hat dich das eher genervt, dass man ja auch mit einer Berührung von dem Boss sofort tot ist und wieder von vorne anfangen muss?
Also ich muss sagen, ich habe eine extrem niedrige Frustrationstoleranz bei Games. Und also ich habe so nach den ersten 5 Mal, die ich da verreckt bin, dann auch keinen Bock mehr gehabt, es nochmal versuchen und bin dann zum anderen Boss. Das kann man ja auswählen. Also wenn du an einem kleben bleibst, kannst du ihn auch einfach sein lassen und du kannst auch das Game ja schaffen, ohne alle Bosse zu killen. Aber ich glaube, also es wurde ja nicht leichter. Also ich habe mir da irgendwie an allen so ein bisschen die Zähne ausgebissen, weil selbst wenn du weißt, wie es geht, heißt das noch lange nicht, dass du es auch hinkriegst.
Nee, im Gegenteil.
Also es ist echt sackschwer.
Ja, und vor allem Teil der Spannung ist ja auch überhaupt rauszufinden oder Teil der Frustration, je nachdem, wie man halt gestrickt ist, kann eben auch sein, dass du überhaupt gar nicht kapierst, was dieser Boss jetzt von dir will. Also du musst schon auch immer so ein bisschen rausfinden. Es ist nicht so ganz so offensichtlich wie bei manchen Bossgegnern, dass irgendwie alles rot leuchtet und du irgendwie genau weißt, du musst ihm jetzt einen Pfeil ins Knie schießen. Aber wenn du es dann mal gesehen hast, wie so ein Boss funktioniert, dann siehst du es auch sofort. Also das haben sie ganz gut hingekriegt. Also Beispiel, da ist jetzt eben so ein Eisblock. Und du weißt genau, okay, du hast ihn mit einem Schuss erledigt, aber du musst erstmal überlegen, wie kriege ich jetzt diesen Eisblock weg? Und dann sind da halt irgendwelche Schalter und dann gibt's natürlich auch die Schalter aktivieren irgendwelche Feuerflammen und dann versuchst du ihn halt irgendwie über die Flammen zu locken. Und ich will jetzt den Boss nicht spoilern, aber man denkt dann immer so, ah, jetzt weiß ich, wie es geht. Und dann klappt's irgendwie nicht. Und dann probiert man's nochmal anders und dann kriegt man's raus. Und selbst dann braucht man halt nochmal 5, 6 Versuche, um den dann wirklich zu schaffen. Und die zwei Entwickler haben auch gesagt, sie haben die Bosse versucht, so von einem Schwierigkeitsgrad zu machen, dass man 10 bis 15 Versuche brauchen sollte im Schnitt. Ja, also du kannst mal mehr brauchen, mal weniger. Und sehr frustrierend fand ich dann, der hat dann den Hard-Modus aktiviert, also wenn du es dann komplett durchgespielt hast, dann schaltet sich noch das New Game Plus sozusagen frei und dann kannst du die noch schwerere Variante der Bosse irgendwie ausprobieren und der hat halt selbst in dem Modus mit einem Schuss irgendwie innerhalb von 2, 3 Sekunden sofort so einen Boss erledigt, weil er mir einfach ein paar Sachen zeigen wollte. Also das Spiel eignet sich, glaube ich, extrem für YouTube, für Streamer, für Speedruns. Ich glaube, in der Szene wird es recht erfolgreich werden, so wie ich es einschätze. Also deine Einschätzung nach nix für dich, oder? Wenn man kein Frustrationslevel hat, sollte man die Finger davon lassen.
Definitiv, ja. Also ich glaube, wer halt so Dark Souls und all sowas feiert, der wird da auf jeden Fall Spaß dran haben. Aber ja, für mich, glaube ich, ein bisschen zu tough erstmal.
Werden wir auch noch im Podcast besprechen. Also die Version ist jetzt auch da. Das heißt, wir werden es auch mal anspielen und oder gewissermaßen schauen, wie weit wir kommen, um dann auch mal eine eigene Folge zu widmen. So, gleich mehr in dem Interview. Und der dritte Entwickler, der hat Ronin mitgebracht. Das Spiel, was noch von den dreien, glaube ich, noch das am ehesten, noch am längsten braucht, so wie ich es mitgekriegt habe. Oder kommt es auch im Mai? Ich glaube, es kommt auch im Mai, gell? Ende Mai. 20. Mai, genau. Ronin, ein PC-Spiel erstmal auch, aber entwickelt für Touchgeräte. Also es wird auch nach dieser PC-Release-Geschichte für iPad oder für iPhone kommen und natürlich auch für Konsolen. Ein sehr interessantes Konzept, wie ich finde. Du bist eine weibliche Ninja und gehst auf Rachefeldzug und versuchst irgendwie alle Leute, die auf so einem Foto sind, umzubringen, weil die irgendwie, weiß gar nicht genau, weil irgendwie dein Vater oder irgendwas deine Mutter umgebracht haben und du willst die alle erledigen. Und das Grundkonzept finde ich eigentlich total clever. Das ist ein Plattformer auf Runden basiert. Also sowas habe ich in der Form noch nicht gesehen. Das war auf jeden Fall von den drei Spielen das mit dem frischesten Konzept, fand ich. Also das war, die anderen Sachen, die hat man ja irgendwie schon so mal gesehen oder es sind Abwandlungen von bestehenden Mechaniken, aber dieses ein Plattformer-Action-Spiel, was dann auf Rundenmechanik aufsetzt, das hatte ich so noch nicht gesehen in der Form.
Also mich hat's, also ich meine, das sagen die ja, das haben die Entwickler selber ja auch schon gesagt, aber mich hat's einfach so mega an Gunpoint erinnert. Also ich habe jetzt, also klar, das Rundenbasierte ist, das gibt's in Gunpoint nicht, aber also es sieht halt schon extrem ähnlich aus und wie es sich spielt, fand ich auch ähnlich, nur halt, dass du mehr Zeit hast durch das Rundenbasierte im Combat, aber also wo die das Rad neu erfunden haben sie da jetzt nicht. Also das fand ich tatsächlich von allen dreien das so am wenigsten aufregende vom Konzept.
Ja, okay, also mich hat es total angesprochen, weil ich bin auch großer Rundenstrategie-Fan und mag das irgendwie, wenn ich auch Zeit habe, so Züge oder so den Schlachtplan irgendwie auszutüfteln. Und ich fand das in der Mischung irgendwie ganz clever. Klar hat es mich auch an gewisse, zum Beispiel hat es an Mark of the Ninja erinnert oder eben an Gunpoint. Aber diese Art und Weise, dass du jederzeit, also du hüpfst mit dem Charakter und hast quasi so eine projizierte Flugbahn und kannst jederzeit anhalten und sagen, nee, jetzt aber hier unten irgendwie hüpf auf den Gegner und erledige ihn mit dem Schwert. Und dann siehst du auch die Schüsse, also da es ja rundenbasiert ist, bist du immer dran in der Action-Sequenz, wenn du das dann anhältst und dann wird dein Zug durchgeführt und dann siehst du schon, okay, also wenn ich jetzt hier bleibe, dann treffen mich die drei Agenten. Das hat so ein bisschen so eine Agenten-Setting, Ninja-Setting, also auch so ein 2D von der Seite. Und du siehst dann die Schusslinien der gegnerischen Agenten oder der Feinde. Und kannst dann halt eben ganz genau planen, okay, die schießen jetzt auf mich, also hüpfe ich jetzt an die Decke, halt mich dort fest, hüpf dann dem einen Gegner auf den Kopf, dann ist der bewusstlos, dann hinterlasse ich einen Decoy, also so ein Hologramm von mir, schwing mich an die Decke, schwing links rüber, geh durch die Tür und erledige ihn dann von hinten. Und das Ganze als Actionspielkomponente, aber trotzdem mit Runden basiert, fand ich, es hat schon, wenn man mal reingekommen ist in diese Steuerung, hat es schon sehr, sehr Spaß gemacht, fand ich, aber es ist nicht ganz so zugänglich gewesen, fand ich, gell? Also man musste sich schon so ein bisschen reintüfteln, um damit klarzukommen.
Mhm, auf jeden Fall. Also ich bin auch am Anfang sehr gerne genau in die Laserstrahlen der Feinde dann irgendwie doch rein, weil ich das verpeilt habe, aber also ich fand es auch alles andere als schlecht, aber halt, also ich kam nicht so, sorry, wenn das sind meine Wellensittiche im Hintergrund.
Ich habe schon gedacht, es klingt nach Vögeln.
Die gerade rumschreien. Ja, die haben irgendein Problem. Ja, also mich hat es halt so extrem an Gunpoint erinnert, was ja aber auch nicht unbedingt was Schlechtes ist. Und die haben ja sogar selber jetzt irgendwie Referenzen zu Gunpoint da eingebaut und so anscheinend. Ich habe jetzt auf Twitter gerade gesehen. Also so ein Nod quasi. Also schlecht fand ich es auf jeden Fall auch nicht.
Ich glaube, dass ich mir das Spiel aber aufheben werde fürs iPad. Also ich glaube, dass das da richtig gut funktioniert, weil hört man jetzt auch gleich in dem Interview, der Entwickler gesagt hat, er hat halt überlegt, wie könnte man so ein Spiel mit diesem Setting und mit dieser Mechanik, wie eben Mark of the Ninja, was ihm super gefallen hat, wie kann man sowas umsetzen mit einer Touch-Steuerung, weil Mark of the Ninja halt einfach nur funktioniert, wenn du ein Gamepad in der Hand hast. Und die Version, die wir jetzt gespielt haben, war zwar mit Gamepad, aber es war ja im Grunde, hast du eigentlich immer nur einen Button gebraucht. Also du hast zwar mit dem rechten Stick so gelenkt, wo du hinführst, aber das hat ja eigentlich nur den Finger simuliert. Und da das ja rundenbasiert ist, wurde halt immer dann eingeblendet, wenn du wenn da mehrere Feinde zum Beispiel in deinem Radius waren, kannst du halt A oder B drücken. Aber auf einem Touchgerät kannst du halt einfach diesen Feind dann andrücken, was dann ausgeführt werden soll. Also von daher glaube ich, dass das einfach wie gemacht sein wird fürs iPad, um trotzdem so einen Strategietitel da zu spielen, mit nur einer Touch-Geschichte. Ich glaube, dass es da erfolgreicher sein wird als jetzt auf dem PC, weil da hast du einfach auch genügend Variante, wie du gesagt hast, Gunpoint, Mark of the Ninja oder eben auch dieses, wie hieß das neulich bei PSN, wo man so in den 50er Jahre Atombunker rumrennt. Das hat ja auch so eine Thematik. Und es war aber das einzige Spiel, was nicht so eine typische Pixeloptik hatte an dem Tag. Das fand ich aufgrund dessen schon allein sehr erfrischend.
Ja, also ich fand's, also ich hab mich halt beim Style so an Gunpoint ein bisschen, also von den Farben, ich habe mir dann auch Screenshots mal so im Vergleich angeguckt, das ist schon mega ähnlich, aber es sieht auf jeden Fall schön aus. Also es ist, es gibt ja auch noch online von einer älteren Version eine Demo und so und das da ist die jetzt auf jeden Fall schon sehr viel schöner, auch mit dem Licht und den Details und so, das ist schon cool.
Das steht und fällt dann, glaube ich, auch mit dem Leveldesign bei diesem Spiel. Wenn es richtig anspruchsvolles Leveldesign nachher wird und ein bisschen Spannung dann auch erzeugt. Das war sehr schwer in den 10, 15 Minuten, die wir da gespielt haben oder 20, da so richtig reinzukommen in das Spiel. Aber wenn man der Vorteil von so einer Rundenstrategie ist, dann glaube ich, dass das wirklich, du kannst dich dann auch sehr, sehr mächtig fühlen, wenn halt so ein Plan dann komplett aufgeht. Weil du ja dann dieses Glückselement quasi ausschaltest und du dann den ganzen Level irgendwie leer räumst in einem Zug und jeder Zug sitzt. Ich glaube, bei gewissen Leveln könnte das dann schon richtig cool wirken. Gut. Ja, also ich nehme jetzt deinen Worten, dass du dich am meisten auf Not a Hero freust und die anderen zwei mal so Titan Souls liegen lässt und Ronin vielleicht mal so anguckst, wenn es irgendwie dir über den Weg läuft. Aber dein Favorit war auf jeden Fall Not a Hero.
Auf jeden Fall.
Der war auch super sympathisch, der Typ von Roll7.
Ja, der bei dem konnte ich mir auch vorstellen, woher diese ganzen Quatschideen irgendwie kommen. Ne? Ja. Das hat er auch erzählt, dass sie das eigentlich nur so als privates Spaßprojekt angefangen haben. Und so wirkt es aber eben auf eine positive Art. Das finde ich eben sehr gut.
Ja, und
wenn man merkt, dass die Entwickler ganz viel Spaß dabei hatten.
Ja, und es hat auch einfach wirklich von der Mechanik, das hat richtig schöne knackige Mechanik gehabt. Also das hat richtig Spaß gemacht, in diesen Gebäuden rumzurennen und die zu säubern. Also ich konnte mich nur schwer trennen von dieser Anspielstation auf jeden Fall. Ich hätte am liebsten weitergespielt. Und bei Titan Souls hatte ich so das Gefühl, das will ich lieber in Ruhe mal bei mir zu Hause spielen. Genauso wie Ronin eben. Und Not a Hero war aber so arcadig, das hat richtig gefetzt irgendwie. Und die Musik war klasse. Das war echt cool. Gut, dann leiten wir jetzt sanft über in die Interviews. Auch in der Reihenfolge, in der wir es jetzt hier gesprochen haben. Not a Hero, Titan Souls und dann Ronin. Viel Spaß mit den Interviews und wir hören uns morgen wieder. Und Helen, danke für den Besuch und für diesen Kurzeindruck.
Sehr gerne.
Wir sehen uns spätestens nächstes Mal in Berlin und grüß deinen bärtigen Chef von uns.
Wird gemacht. Auf Wiedersehen.
Tschüss. Okay, wir sitzen jetzt hier bei Not a Hero mit dem Entwickler. Hi there.
Hi.
Maybe you should introduce yourself to our listeners.
I should. I'm John Robbins. I'm the creative director at Roll7. And on Not a Hero, I'm kind of programmer / designer.
Okay. How big is your team?
So Roll7's kind of changed in size. Yeah. We did all the early, we had a quite big team, but Not a Hero is basically three people working on the game.
Okay. Did it start out like a side project inside your
Yeah. company? So we had, when we signed early with Sony in 2012, we had some time off. We had some time between them saying they wanted the game and us actually like making the game. Yeah. And in the gap in between, I sort of was playing around with ideas and this was originally You're Not a Hero, which was kind of the same. It just didn't look as nice and was a lot harder and less balanced. But yeah, so it was kind of a side project initially.
Congratulations on winning the BAFTA for best sports game, by the way.
Thank you.
We really love Ollie in the podcast because it captures the flow, you know, like bringing back the old skateboard, like getting into the flow and still getting, you know, like the flow that a lot of games get, that you're like, you get your mind set on the game after a while.
And you just hit restart.
Yeah, restart, and you master the level after a couple of times. Is there some similarity like in Not a Hero? Or?
It's maybe a bit of a departure. I think we wanted to make something that was kind of easier to get into, perhaps. Mm-hmm. There is that thing with Olioli of like, you know, the like 5-10 minute bit where it's just like, I don't know what I'm doing. And then it clicks and you're like, okay, cool, I know what I'm doing. Whereas I think Not a Hero is maybe like more accessible from the start. Like it's easier to get into, and that point where it starts getting tricky is maybe like slightly later on in the game, but it kind of lets you understand it first and have some fun.
How would you describe Not a Hero from like the genre aspect?
Depends how old you are. Right? if you played games a long time ago, it's like Blackthorn meets Elevator Action. And if it's less, if you're a more recent gamer, then I guess it's like 2D Gears of War.
Yeah. It reminds me of Mission Impossible. You still know that.
I haven't played Mission Impossible. You're the second person to say that today. Yeah. I never checked it out.
Yeah. Where you open elevator doors and kill people. But I think he could jump. Because Not a Hero is a platformer kind of game, but you can't jump, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Heroes can't jump.
Yeah. Was that like the design decision from the beginning?
I think obviously a lot of it's about like navigating buildings. So it's still going up and down staircases and obviously like jumping out of windows and jumping into windows further down. It was weird because like when we started making it, there was no need to have a jump.
Yeah.
it actually started life as another game called Jeffrey Archer, which was a kind of like a cross between like Spelunky and Angry Birds. Mm-hmm. So you kind of moved around these randomly generated dungeons and fired arrows at people. And then once we turned it into Not a Hero and we started putting the cover system and stuff, there was still jump. You could still jump in the very early build, but there was never any point.
Yeah.
And I think like mechanically it throws up issues, right? Like being able to jump in the middle of a gunfight means your enemies need to like aim up and shoot up in the air at you. And kind of, it seemed unnecessary, I guess.
And I just played the game and it's that fast. You don't really have time to think about, I need to jump now.
Yeah.
The only part where you need to jump is like when you jump out of windows, but that happens naturally.
You have the slide as well, which kind of gives you the distance.
I like the speed of the game, that it feels very, very much in motion.
Yeah. I think it's, and no, again, like we wanted a balance, like a bit like Olioli, there is like kind of one way to play that game, right?
Yeah.
And like, I think it's a good way to play it. You get into that flow and there's like this like momentum that you maintain. I think Renata Hiro wanted to give you the option to have these characters that play quite differently. So you've got people that you can kind of keep your distance and use cover and hide and like wait for the right moment to pop out.
Yeah.
But then if you want to play it like a kind of gung-ho badass, like there are characters that are really quick and you can just like slide through the whole level and like murder everyone in 10 seconds.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit about Broforce, you know, but without the chaotic random factor. Here the levels are designed, the guys, you pick one character design and you play with that character. It feels like a more refined version of that.
Oh, I'd feel bad to say yes, because that makes it sound like Broforce.
No, I like Broforce for the chaotic moment, you know, like getting a friend on your couch and play the shit out of Broforce.
And then they like blow the platform out from underneath you and you're like, what? You got me killed.
Exactly. But this feels different, but the mechanics feel a little bit the same, like the speed and the explosions and stuff like that.
And I think, like, I guess, in some ways, like the humor as well.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're both games that, like, are okay with being silly and like being like, yeah, when you shoot a guy, he's not gonna die realistically, he's gonna like spin through the air and fall out of a window and stuff.
And,
like
and the sarcastic voice, of course.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's we really wanted to like, I don't know, some people are gonna hate it, and that's fine, but like, we really wanted to kind of put our humor into it, I guess. Like, there seemed to be. I don't know, like, there's a lot of violent games that take themselves very seriously, and I think we wanted to do something that was violent, but also just very silly at the same time.
But you stay with the silly part, right? You're not going the Hotline Miami approach where the brutality is like, there's a message behind Hotline Miami, or at least the guys try to, but here's like just pure fun, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's... Like, you kind of work for Bunny Lord, who's this, like, huge purple rabbit. In the future, he's trying to get
the guy's called Bunny Lord. Maybe my question is obsolete now.
Yeah. But, like, I think what we wanted to do with him was, like, he wasn't part of the game initially, right?
Okay.
It was, like, initially it was just a game about murdering people.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we started to think about, like, what's the story and why are you doing this, we realized, like, well, really all you want to do as a player is murder people. Like, it's a shooting up. Like, I want to shoot people. And so, like, Bunny Lord's supposed to kind of almost be like the voice of the player.
So,
like, he's like, yeah, we're trying to get an elected mayor and we need to, like, get voters on side. So we're probably going to go and, like, shoot some guys. Because, like, that's what the player wants to do. You know, you're like, no, I don't really care about your election. I just want to go and shoot some guys. And he kind of feels the same way. So I guess it's kind of poking fun at, like, how a lot of narratives in shoot 'em ups work.
It feels like the game knows it's a game.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. So the missions are, but it's not like just kill people and get to the end of the level. It's like a mission-based system or like optional things you have to do.
So I guess like when it starts off, most of the first few levels literally are just like kill everybody. And then it starts to kind of change up how that's going to work. So you get missions where you've got to save hostages or you've got to get somewhere in a certain amount of time or you've got to like get an old lady home without her getting mugged or like... It starts to throw these like silly extras that you've got to go and do on top. And then it builds challenges on top of that. So you've then got like three extra things that you can do in each mission, which is like finding some stuff that's lost or like finding
collectible stuff.
Yeah, you're like finding a cat that Bunny Lord needs to like give to some orphans or something. And they kind of like, unlike Oli Oli, where you can, like the Oli Oli challenges, you can keep going back to a level and just trying that one challenge over and over again until you get it. The Not a Hero challenges, the goal is to try and beat the level and all three challenges in like one perfect run. Like, so it doesn't save your challenge progress with each run. It only saves your like end result. Which I think was interesting for us because it was kind of like being able to go, well, now we can like stack the difficulty, like get through a level with only five shots. That's quite easy to do on its own, but get through a level with only five shots and don't get shot yourself is like harder again. And then do all of that in under a minute is like harder again. And I think we wanted to like just play with something. Like, I still wanted challenges in there, but I think we wanted to do something slightly different with those challenges than we did from Oli Oli, rather than just replicate that system again, I guess.
Yeah. What was the main difference, like getting this game? Like, did it start on a game jam style, or did you make internal discussions about, and did you try out different experiments? What was the key moment where you guys decided that feels like that could be our next game?
So we built a bunch of prototypes, right? So between like Oli Oli signing and actually like launching it, and even while we were doing Oli Oli, like we were still playing around with other ideas and like,
sure.
I don't know, I guess like making games is my hobby, so I'll do it at the weekend anyway. So like we had like Jeffrey Archer, which was the game I mentioned before, which is like where the actual just kind of mechanics of cover came from for the game. And then we had another game called Hackathor, which had like this randomly generated conversation stuff, which is where we kind of got the inspiration for doing like Barney Lord and how he talks and so on. I don't think there was a point that we actually were like, okay, this should be the next game. Like we'd kind of, I'd been doing it in the evenings and whatever in my own time. And I kind of reached a point where it's like, I've worked on this for like 6 months and like, I think it's kind of okay. And like, I've been like showing it to friends and it literally been like people giving me feedback going like, hey, there should be a guy with a shotgun. And it was like, okay, cool. Make a guy with a shotgun. Or like, hey, you should be able to like punch guys out of windows and be like, okay, we can do that. And it was never, it was nice to be outside of that like production cycle where, you know, if you
gave you a little bit more freedom and like stuff to try out.
Like if you're doing Ollie Ollie and someone goes like, yo, there should be like slow-mo. Then it's like, okay, right. What are the implications of that in our timeline, right? Whereas when you're just messing around, it's like, okay, cool. Yeah, I can spend a week doing that. Yeah. Why not? And when we put the game out at the end of 2012, like we put it up on our website and just gave it away for free, the prototype of Night Hero. And kind of, I think we got like 24 downloads. And we were like, okay, no one likes this. And then it kind of got some coverage and some indie sites wrote about it. And then it got a lot of downloads and quite a lot of people seemed to really enjoy it. And like, I think that was the point where it was like, okay, cool. Like people are like streaming, people are like YouTubing this. This was kind of before Twitch, I guess, was big. So it's like, yeah, people are like making YouTube playthroughs and writing about it and emailing us being like, I had loads of fun.
That's a perfect point to get like more involved in the game and make a full-fledged game out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the point. It was like, okay, cool. Like people seem to be quite into this and like watching people play and be like, okay, like the core of that game, like people find that fun.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do more.
How much did the game change during the development? Like,
was it's like a lot.
Yeah.
That was Fork Parker, actually. You guys.
It's
he's real.
He's only kind of real. It's like Kaiser Soze. Yeah,
this
I mean, like
come out in 2013.
Yeah, well, it was going to come out a long time ago. So it's, like the art style's totally changed. Obviously, like a year into making it, we met Jake Hollins, who's the artist on the game. And it was just clear that his pixel art was going to make this thing look so much better. And then obviously once he got involved and he kind of changed how some stuff was drawn, how animation worked, and that technically changed what we were doing and making the game. And like we've been to a lot of shows, like we've shown it a lot of places. You see a lot of people playing the game, and I guess that really helps you kind of maybe hone down like what's fun and what works and what doesn't work. So there's been a lot of like, especially with the cover system and the controls, just a lot of iteration on that. Like,
yeah.
What do people struggle with? How do we make it?
And the level feels different with like depending on the character you pick, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
and that balancing thing of being like, well, we need to kind of make sure there are some levels that are just impossible with certain characters because of the way they play. But that balancing thing of being like, for most levels, you should be able to beat them with all the characters doesn't sound that hard on the outset, but when you actually have to make that work, it is, it's kind of stupid.
Yeah. So how many different characters are in the game now?
There's 9 and like one secret level with a secret character.
Okay. And like a couple of other ideas you threw away that didn't work out or?
There was a lot of scraps of characters. And actually like the last 2 characters that you get have melee weapons. And really until about 6 months ago, they only had melee weapons. And like we realized that just totally like broke the mechanics of the game. They had to have guns as well. So even the characters that did make the cut have actually changed a lot since their original like concept for what they'd be.
What is your favorite character?
Oh, that's really hard. I really like Jesus.
Obviously the one with the Scottish.
The Scottish accent.
There's a lot of the guys at Devolver seem to be Team Cletus. They seem to be really into the shotgun guy. I like Jesus because he can slide and shoot. And the last character, Kimmy, I think is pretty amazing with her samurai sword.
Do you think that the pixel optic for indie games is like timeless? Will they always be pixel games? Or is it like something like that indie developers are kind of fond of because it's a good way to start a game? Or
I think pixel art is the harder route to go, right? Like,
that was my follow-up question, isn't it? Like a harder thing to do that. Because there's so many 3D engines that give you like...
Yeah, and I guess like, so there's like 4 different enemies in each world of the game. So there's like 12, 15 different enemies, plus like special ones like policemen or whatever, right? Yeah. But like, because it's pixel art, it's not like we drew one character, animated him, and then you can apply those animations to all the others. Like every character you draw has to be individually like hand animated frame by frame by frame. So I think in many ways it is the harder choice, but at the same time, like, I think the skill barrier and like the just the knowledge barrier to doing something in 3D. Like, if I want to make a quick 3D prototype, like, I've got to build a 3D model, I've got to know how to do that and texture it and rig it and animate it. And that's so much harder than opening up Paint and just drawing like a crappy thing and being like, cool, I've got that to like play with now. But I think it's an interesting question when people are like, oh, why did you choose pixel art?
Yeah.
It's like, we didn't sit there and go, well, we could make this 3D, we could make this pixel art, but let's go pixel art because it's kind of cool and retro and we like fit into this like hipster game thing. It's more like, that's just how I've made games since I was like six. So
that's like the style you're drawn to, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's just how I've always made games. It's kind of how like it makes sense to me.
I think it's easier to get into like making pixel art, but like making a pixel game is actually harder if you don't know the tricks. And
there's a lot of work, and I think there's a lot of work in it, and there's a lot of kind of having to be quite sure about what something is going to be before you draw it. Because if you suddenly decide the guy needs a hat or he should have a moustache or something, you've got to go back and draw a moustache on every single frame. Yeah, I made Jake's life quite miserable at times by changing stuff at the last minute for sure.
Great. When is the game coming out?
May 7th.
Okay.
So next month, 3 weeks? 3 weeks? 3 weeks.
Great. And it's PC only right now, right?
It's PC only, and it'll be PS4 and PlayStation Vita later in the year.
Yeah.
But we're a really small team, so it's get the first one done.
Sure.
Good. And then we can port it elsewhere.
Looking forward to play the game.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for coming and playing. Appreciate it.
Have a nice rest of the Europe trip.
I'm going to go home
and
sleep.
Remember to sleep, exactly.
I will do. Cool, thanks for coming down. I appreciate it.
Und weiter geht's mit den beiden Entwicklern von Titan Souls von Acid Nerve.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Maybe you introduce yourself to our listeners first.
Sure. Well, I'm Mark Foster. I'm the lead designer and the programmer for Titan Souls.
And I'm David Fenn. I'm the composer and sound designer.
From Titan Souls.
Yes. Yeah.
And this is your first game, I guess.
Yeah, this is our first proper like commercial game.
Yeah,
we made some like jam games and stuff in the past. But, yeah, this is the first one we've taken to like.
Yeah, this one started out as a jam, and then Devolver Digital offered us the opportunity to make it into a full game. So yeah, this is kind of our first commercial project.
Yeah. So this game started as a game jam game by Ludum Dare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you guys meet there? Like, was the three guys that are involved in the game now the introduction?
We'd worked together before on a jam game before. Okay. And actually, through Ludum Dare, we met the guy who works on the art for Titan Souls.
The Australian
as well.
Guy?
Yeah. Because he did jams by himself and he commented on our stuff and we played his and we liked each other's work. So we asked him if he just wanted to join us for this one, which became Titan Souls.
And then we ended up working together for a year.
Yeah, yeah.
So the theme of the game covers the Ludum Dare theme very well. What is the theme exactly? It was like you only get one. You only get one.
Yeah. So we had the one arrow thing, the one HP, and all the bosses had one HP as well. So we really went all in with the theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that theme
and stayed fairly true to that throughout the entire full game as well.
Yeah. That's the core of the game as it is. Like, we took that from the jam game and like just expanded on it basically.
So how much from the Dare game is in this game now? Like, was it just like the basic mechanic?
From scratch.
Yeah, there was three bosses in that original jam game.
But the original game idea is still the same.
The concept is pretty much exactly the same, but the engine's redone, and obviously it's much bigger and expanded. And
feels better to play. Like, the original jam game was like four directional aiming on keyboard, whereas this is like 360 with a control like analog stick.
How many hours was the Ludum Dare?
72
hours. When was the point that you guys knew this could be a full-fledged game?
When Devolver said, do you want to make it a full game?
So long after the Ludum Dare.
Yeah. We were like, people...
Well, actually, no, like, as soon as it went up, then we started getting positive feedback straight away.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, when we finished it, we were like, people are going to hate this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was really hard.
We knew it was divisive.
Yeah, it was really difficult, really brutal, and it was really punishing.
We thought it might be too divisive and too difficult for people, but then... Actually, the reception was quite, well, like, mostly really positive, and people really enjoying it. Although some of our close friends in like the Manchester development community were just like really annoyed. It's just saying like, it's too hard. What are you playing?
So at what point did Devolver try to contact you guys? Like, they saw the game as a Ludum Dare contestant, right?
Yeah. It was a few days later.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was fast.
It wasn't, yeah. It
didn't Fort take Parker long. Is such a fast
yeah. I think, did it win before?
I think it must have been a few days after the results. No, it wasn't.
I can't remember.
I can't remember.
Like, I think Rock Paper Shotgun covered then. It.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think then Rami started talking about it on Twitter.
Yeah.
And that's the point where we're like, okay, we're going to drop your mail about it. Okay. So just start talking with Nigel from Devolver about it.
Yeah. But you guys aren't like game developers during that time when Devolver contacted you, right? Or did you work in the industry already?
Well, you've done some stuff with, like audio.
I've like probably a year before then. I used to do bits of freelance work for like very small jobs in video games and like mobile games and that kind of thing. But actually, before the jam, then I just had a day job at a bank.
Mm-hmm. I used to work. My last job was working in a software like thing for warehouses.
Yeah.
So it wasn't anything to do with games. But I'd saved up some money then. I'd quit my job and I was working on another game full time. And I'd been doing that for like a year before that.
But you were able to do that. Like the offer was like, here, guys, make this idea into a full game, and we will cover the cost for your living.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
That kind of a deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. That's like a little dream come true, isn't it?
Oh yeah, definitely.
The past like year has been the best year of my life.
Yeah.
Be able to just like make games and not really worry about money or anything. Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
So today, like the day of the recording, the day of the event is like the day of the release.
Yeah.
Yes.
The game goes live in about 4 hours.
I met you guys like last evening, and you were like pretty nervous, like checking Twitter feed all the time and discussing scores. What does it feel like to get a game released that you work for like a year on?
Strange.
Feel nothing.
Not yet, or?
Yeah, we'll see.
It like, didn't sink it in feels, already? Or?
It's not sunk in, basically.
Yeah, it's always felt like the game is always at least a month away from launching. And now that it's like, it's going to happen, it just feels the same as that. It feels like, nah, it's not really going to happen. Or it's just, I can't comprehend the fact that people are going to stop playing it. It's a weird thing.
I would say I was worried, but we know that people love it because so many people have already played it and like people have done streams of it and loads of people have had loads of fun with it. So it's kind of like, there's nothing really to worry about, but also don't want to be too optimistic. It's just like, I'll just stay neutral and see what happens.
Yeah, it's like being a worried parent sending your kid off to school for the first time, I think. That's what it kind of feels like.
Yeah, especially if you make this face like for the first time, you know? Like,
we haven't done this
we've
before.
Never
we've never launched
a game
that we want to sell, so it's all new.
Yeah. How do you feel like when your game gets compared to like huge names like Ico and Shadow of the Colossus and Zelda and stuff like that? Is it like
it's not
a bad
fair,
habit?
It's our first game.
Is it like a bad habit of like game journalists to that's just like
I think it can get
tedious just purely because of how often it's the first thing someone says. It's like, oh, that's like Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah.
Whereas like that's not really the first thing there is to say about the
game.
The
thing is, we've talked to a lot of people about it.
Yeah.
And I think a thing for people to do is they want to have some kind of metric to measure things.
Yeah, they want a reference.
So if you say like, oh, it's this plus this or whatever, it kind of gives you an idea.
Yeah, it's a quickest way.
What to expect.
But you could explain what the game is, but like it is faster to just say it's this plus this.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, if you say it's like Shadow of the Colossus plus whatever, it's just not anything like that.
It
has the concept of boss fights in it or whatever, but it's nothing like those games.
Yeah.
Those games have like grand, long, drawn out, epic kind of battles. Whereas this is like, it's constantly intense,
yeah. There's no like gradual grind or anything. It's just
of course there is a similarity that there's like a vast world with like big titans.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like the small guy.
Yeah, like the
and
core.
You beat them, and there's no official reason to beat them. You know,
yeah.
Like the Malachony of the Shadow of the Colossus game is still in there.
Yeah,
that's
like,
true.
But that
and we
then
definitely
it ends.
Know that. We're inspired by Shadow of the Colossus from that starting point.
Yeah. You're not
then,
denying that. No.
Yeah, not at all. Like, obviously, the name's Titan Souls. It doesn't sound like we're denying our influences at all.
Yeah, I think we wear our influences on our sleeve,
basically. Definitely. But other than that, it's really a compliment to be compared to game like such good games.
Yeah, to be held in
for
the same bracket
game,
like is pretty cool in the same regard.
Cool.
You just have to hope you can live up to those standards.
I've played the game now a little bit, and it's not a game that captures you like in the first like 2-3 minutes. You know, like we talked about that yesterday evening. Like, how how hard is it to make people understand how your game needs to be played? You know, like you can play a game like on different ways, like you attack a game like it's a trial and error game, or do you like play more defensively? Mm. There's not that much way that you can tell the players stop everything you're doing. You're doing it wrong. Or is that even a thing?
We've made it a certain way that certain people will play it.
It'll click with them.
Click with them. So some people maybe just won't enjoy the game. There's no baby about it. Some people won't enjoy the game.
Yeah.
It'll be like too difficult or like too punishing, or they just won't like the mechanics or whatever, which is fine. Because I would prefer it if we made a game that certain people really loved and a lot of people hated. Yeah. Than everyone kind of liked. It was okay. You know, you want to make something special for a small group of people. Yeah. So I think it is a very niche game. Yeah. And to be honest, it's like been... people like it more than we even expected from the start. So
that's the people who it is really aimed towards, I think they pick up pretty quickly how we want them to play it from some streams that I've watched of the game and that kind of thing. Like people are playing it in the exact way that we hoped, where each like they're trying to be careful, but they're taking opportunities like killing a titan when they can see an opportunity there. Yeah. But then obviously it doesn't always work out, but then they'll recover from that situation and carry on.
Isn't it nice that you can see people playing your game, like because of all the Twitch stuff and YouTube stuff? Like 10 years ago, people just left the game out in the open.
Yeah. Probably had no idea like what was
just
really
saw some
that
sales numbers, maybe,
it.
Or like direct.
It's so much more useful to see people play it, because I think as well, like seeing a review doesn't really give you the picture of what kind of time someone had playing, because they're thinking like, oh, how good are these things in terms of game design and that kind of thing. But seeing a stream is like reveals a lot more about if people are having the kind of time that you wanted them to have.
What's there in the future for you? Like, are you trying to is your team staying together for like the three guys that made this game?
I think so.
We have no plans. Probably. Like, we've really enjoyed making this. So.
You work for this like for a year now. Is it like a big, huge gap now, and you feel like exhausted, or is it like, let's make?
I kind of want to make something.
I've been kind of exhausted because I've had a lot to do over the past like few months. I would like to take a little bit of a break, like maybe a month, to just like do some game jams and stuff, and like chill out and play Bloodborne.
That's what you call a break.
Yeah, that's a break for me. Playing Bloodborne. But I am kind of eager to do something new as well. Like, there's a ton of ideas I want to try, but I have no idea what I'm going to like end up making.
There's no like three different ideas already there that you discussed.
There's a few, but nothing set in stone at all. So we'll just like maybe do some jams and just see what happens and see if we get like a really interesting idea.
Seem to work out for you guys.
Yeah, jams have been our friends so far.
Great. Thanks for the interview.
Thanks.
Good
a lot,
luck with the launch.
Thank you.
I hope you can sleep well tonight after the release and you start feeling again.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks. Good luck.
Cheers.
Und last but not least, das dritte Interview mit dem russischen Entwickler von Ronin.
Okay, wir sitzen jetzt mit dem Entwickler von Ronin. Hi there.
Hi.
Could you introduce yourself to the listeners, please?
My name is Tom, and I am the creator of Ronin, a turn-based action platformer from Devolver Digital.
Yeah. So you said action, turn-based?
Yeah, it's
maybe
turn-based.
Maybe you should explain what exactly is a turn-based action game.
Turn-based action game is a game where when basically I think it's a genre in itself. This is the first game in this genre. And the game is a platformer which plays like a real-time game. Mm-hmm. You can jump, walk, but when the combat starts, the game becomes a turn-based game. Mm-hmm. Every action of your character is met with one action of your enemies. So you cannot like mash buttons and expect to kill everyone before they do anything. You have to plan carefully every step.
So it makes you feel even more powerful, because you're like, you really feel like a ninja, like a super ninja, when you expect the next move and plan the next attack, and you have all the time of the world because the time stops when it's your turn, right?
Yes, exactly. You can see trajectories of your enemy's bullets. Mm-hmm. and you can see a trajectory of your jump, so you can perfectly plan your next move kill your enemies at your own pace.
In style.
Yeah.
I like the setting of the game. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that. The game starts with a family picture.
Yes, the game starts with a splash screen / intro.
Well, the demo we played now.
Yes. That, this is a picture from days before, from the past of our main character. And it basically introduces all the characters early in the game. It's her, her father, and some people who associates of her father, friends. And the story is that she's going back, coming back from to this city, seek revenge on those people, just crossing them out from the list, which is this picture.
So it's like a revenge story.
Yes,
she's on a mission to get revenge.
Yes, she's out of for a revenge after her father.
Mm-hmm. The game started as a jam game. Did you come up with the idea during a game jam, or was it like a?
Yeah, it I think with all jump entries, it's like you have this idea at the back of your head for this game, and the jump actually is only a pretext to start doing that.
Mm-hmm. But you had the idea beforehand, or was like the idea for the game set during the game jam, or did you go to the game jam because you had like a great idea and wanted to have the time to make a game?
I think. Doing game jams is great in that way. You get a deadline,
mm-hmm.
and this is the most important thing for people starting doing any basic any creative work. You have to have a deadline because if you don't have one, you either won't start anything or you won't just finish it.
Yeah.
You will just tweak stuff for a year.
It will be a side project forever.
Yeah, side project forever. So going to a game jam is all about this, for me at least.
Mm.
Doing something in a very rapid way with a deadline.
Yeah, and getting results.
That's the most important thing, I think.
Yeah. So how much from the game jam game version is like the game now? Did the developer, the publisher, contacted you after the game jam, or did you contact them? How did that work?
I did contact them.
Mm-hmm. With the prototype from the game jam?
Actually, no. The game jam ended after 10 days, and I had the core mechanic there in that very early prototype. The idea to perform combat in a turn-based manner, dodge enemies, bullets, and
like a proof of concept.
Yes, that was basically the proof of concept, and that was the reason I kept working on it, because some people liked it, I liked it, and I've seen potential in it, so that's why I kept doing it. But the final prototype, as I call it, was created after 6 months of work on this initial prototype, and only that final prototype was actually shown to Devolver. So they bought the game at that moment.
Okay, because they saw the potential as well.
And then, yes, exactly.
And now you have the time to finish the game because of Devolver. Like, that was your goal, right? Like, to get the publisher to get the funding for finishing the game.
Yeah, I need the funding, obviously. But what Devolver brings to the table is not only the money, but the most important thing, basically, the fact that we are here sitting and talking about this. I would have never made it that far without them.
A lot of indie developers try, you know, like... making Kickstarter stuff or like getting the word of mouth for that game, but it's a tough business.
Yeah, it's a tough business, and one thing you have to actually have a talent for that. Not everyone has that.
Yeah.
There are obviously the GDC indies who are very very PR friendly with the blue hairs and whatever. Interesting personalities, but I'm more of a Russian lone coder in a dirty room, kind of a indie developer. Yeah. So I don't have an interesting personality. I'm super boring. I speak with an accent. I'm not outgoing or anything.
Yeah, that's okay. You don't have to make excuses to go to developer. For God's sake.
No, I don't. It's good to remember sometimes that indie developer is not always this super cool guy, super good people you can meet on a party, and then spend all night talking about stuff. It's also Russian coders from like Poland.
Or like just a coder sitting in a room and want to make a game and not want to go to game talks. Yeah.
Yeah, I know exactly.
What is the plan for Ronin now? Like the demo is out now on Steam?
Demo will be out on Tuesday, so okay. It's April 16th, mm-hmm. I think, and the game will be out on Steam May 20th.
For PC, Mac, Linux, like the typical...
Yes, PC, Mac, and Linux.
No. So, do you want to wait, like, how the game develops on the market until you decide if you can port it to, like, consoles, PS Vita? Because I played the prototype now, and I think it's a perfect fit for the PlayStation Vita, you know, like, with the right stick aiming and stuff. Feels like a console game to me.
Yeah, that was a surprise for me, because the game was initially designed as a Turskin game. But yes, it works with the game quite well. At least most of the time, we'll be making a port for PS4 and PS Vita right away, like as fast as we can. Mm-hmm. The real question is if you are going to put the game on mobile devices, because that's going to be a lot of work. And
it actually work as well, like with the touch and aiming and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
How many iterations did it take you to... Was the idea to make a turn-based action game the main idea? Or was it like, did you experiment and came up with that mechanic? Or was it like your main goal to make like turn-based and action a thing?
No, this is just a slogan we thought of way, way later. Mm-hmm. The initial idea for me was to create a stealth game, stealth mm-hmm. platformer like Mark of the Ninja, mm-hmm. for example, and that would work on a touchscreen device,
okay,
like an iPad.
So you came from the story, kind of, yeah, from the setting, making a stealth game.
Yeah, stealth game, but the thing was not about the story or setting, but the gameplay mechanics, because games on touchscreen devices are rather simple. Not because developers who are making them are simple people, but because the controls on a touchscreen are clunky. Basically, you have to create virtual buttons, and it's hard to create a game would play a game like Mark of the Ninja or any platformer that matter on a touchscreen device that would work well and would not be clunky.
Yeah.
So my idea to solve this problem was to create a game that will wait for you mm-hmm. until you actually make an input and make a decision. Yeah. What actually you want to do.
Yeah, and whether decision making is not based like on skill, like making different strokes on the gamepad and pressing different buttons, but making the decision. Like
yes.
Now in this game, in Ronin, you can decide between, do you want to hit guy A or guy B?
Guy B.
And it gets you all the time that you need to
yes, decide. Yes, exactly. That was the point.
Yeah, great. So the turn-based came naturally, actually.
Yes, that was a natural consequence of assuming that the game has to be playable on a touchscreen device.
Mm.
It has to be as complex as... maybe not as complex as Mark of the Ninja, because that game is super complex.
Yeah, but getting the theme and the
but getting idea. the traditionally... a game traditionally played on a PC or a console, playable on a iPad or mobile.
Great. Good luck with the game.
Thank you.
Looking forward to playing it on my Vita or
iPad, I don't care. I think it works on both platforms. Did you develop it yourself, or is it a bigger team?
The prototype I created myself. I even made the art, so it was very bad. To this day, I'm surprised that Devolver bought that. Like, it was so awful. They really want this game.
I think they've seen their share of Coda arts.
So to that point, I did everything myself except the music. I got Gail making the music, but after that, after Devolver checked in, I hired an artist, and the way the game looks like now, mm-hmm, is his work.
Okay, great. And are you now like a developer, because you already worked in a studio, right? You already worked on
games. I'm still working, actually.
Yeah. So this is like a side project?
And yes, this is 100% side project.
Okay. So you're looking forward to making more games, or is it like, what's the difference between making a game on your own, like with like two people, and like working in a big studio? Do you enjoy both sides of the story, or is it like you dream to make your own games?
I definitely enjoy both sides of the story, and I want to do both of these things.
Yeah.
It always keeps things fresh. When you can collaborate with a lot of very talented and interesting and experienced people, working with them in a bigger studio, but also it's very fulfilling to create your own things where you have 100% of control what will happen and how the game will look, and you don't have to answer to your shareholders or investors. You can do whatever, basically. Yeah.
And you're involved in every process.
Yes,
and it's not like you're just making concept art for a game, or like just code one engine part.
Yeah, obviously I design everything and I code everything.
Yeah.
So that's 100%. But I also do art direction. I decide which music will go where, and so I'm involved 100% in every aspect of the game, even the promotion, as you can see. So it's interesting in that way, for sure.
Good. Check out the demo, guys, and we see you in, when is the release? May?
May 20.
Yeah. Looking forward for that. Good luck with the game.
Thank you very much.
And have fun in Paris.
Thanks.
Bye.